for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. With the rainy season in Haiti just weeks away, the government and aid groups are turning their attention from recovery efforts to providing shelter. An estimated 600,000 people are living in tents in and near the capital city of Port-au-Prince. Living in such close quarters with poor or non-existent sanitation raises fears of disease outbreaks. Joining me here in the studio to bring us the latest developments in Haiti, Dr. Ron Waldman. He's with the U.S. Agency for International Development. James Kimsey, he's chairman of the International Commission on Missing Persons and chairman emeritus of Refugees International. Joining us from the Pentagon, Surgeon General of the Navy, Admiral Adam Robinson. And throughout the hour, you can join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. And you can also join us through Facebook and Twitter. Good morning to you, James Kimsey.
Good morning, Diane.
And to you, Admiral Robinson.
Good morning, Diane.
Dr. Waldman, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Diane.
I gather that you, Dr. Waldman, just returned from Haiti yesterday. Give us the latest and your own assessment of the situation there.
Diane, I returned last night after being in Haiti for about 5 weeks. The situation is terrible, as you can imagine. The suffering of the Haitian people has been, if possible, underestimated, I think, by many. I don't in my career remember having dealt with a disaster of this proportion, at least in terms of it having affected the capital city, the seat of government of a country. And nor witness the incredible widespread destruction that it caused.
When you say, if anything, it's been underestimated, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean by that is that the numbers of people killed, several hundred thousand, as many injured, but I think that what people sometimes forget to take into account is the actual physical destruction of the city, of the capital city, with all of the buildings down. So we talk about wanting to provide health care to people, but the fact is there are no hospitals, there are no clinics. I wouldn't say none, but many have been destroyed. Schools have been destroyed. Seats of government that we hope to cooperate with, the Ministry of Health, for example, other ministries, the Presidential Palace, all of these have been destroyed as well. And that's what makes it very, very difficult to move as quickly as one might or as one might be able to in other circumstances.
Dr. Ron Waldman is coordinator of U.S. Government Medical and Health Emergency Response, located in Haiti. He is with USAID. Jim Kimsey, when you were in Haiti recently, you met with President Preval. There have been lots of criticisms of his not being on the scene, of his somehow being removed. How did you find him?
He's a thoughtful, not very charismatic person, but a nice person. So he gives off the impression of not being a strong leader. We talked to him at some length. I went down with the president of the Inter-American Development Bank, Luis Alberto Moreno, and we talked about financial issues as well as the issues that concern my two organizations. And unfortunately, he is a thoughtful man, and not a very active man, which gives the impression that his leadership qualities are somewhat lacking.
Do you feel he was simply overwhelmed by the entire episode and is still overwhelmed?
My impression was that this was daunting for him, that he had his problems before this catastrophe, and this exacerbated him to a degree that he had never experienced before.
At the same time, I think there is a great deal of concern in this country about all the dollars that are going into Haiti and whether those dollars are finding the places they should be going.
And that concern is justified. President Moreno and I heard numerous times while we were on this trip that 50% of American households, by one means or another, had contributed to the relief efforts in Haiti. That's, when you think about it, a lot of resources that are being funneled down there. And their ability to handle these resources and direct them and focus them in an efficient way was limited before this happened. And so I think this is going to be one of the biggest challenges of our efforts down there, is to make sure that these resources, of which there's a lot, are coordinated and efficiently used, and they don't have an infrastructure in place to do that.
James Kimsey, he's chairman of the International Commission on Missing Persons, chairman emeritus of Refugees International, founding CEO and chairman emeritus of America Online, Inc. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Admiral Robinson, bringing you into the conversation, is the U.S. Comfort phasing out patients?
The U.S. Comfort has received less patients consistently over the last several days, and I don't think that I can say that we're phasing out patients, but I think that there's certainly less patients arriving for our care. Of the 1,200, almost 1,300 patients that we have seen, most with very acute and severe orthopedic and other soft tissue and internal injuries, most have required surgery. Many have required intensive care, and that limit and that number of patients beginning on approximately the 19th, 20th of January has certainly diminished. But we're not quite phasing out in the sense that Comfort is on station and will care for the patients and the people that that arrive.
How many patients are on board now?
I think that there are approximately 40 patients on board now, and that number is decreasing on a daily basis as we get long-term and even short-term care situations arranged for within country.
But what about the medical community there, to what extent is it able to deal with the extraordinary number of problems that they must be encountering?
I think that the medical community in Haiti before this catastrophe was very limited. In 1999, I lived in Haiti in Port-au-Prince and took a fleet hospital there. We saw about 26,000 Haitian nationals in a in that six-month deployment giving humanitarian assistance. At that time, there were small clinics scattered throughout the Port-au-Prince area. There was a Port-au-Prince, there was a local hospital which was very limited in its capacity. There were there was one private hospital that had much more capacity, but there was very little medical care available in Haiti. I'm talking 1999. So prior to the earthquake, in my experience in Haiti, there was very little infrastructure in terms of medical services for anyone. After the earthquake, I can tell you that I imagine, as a matter of fact, I'm sure that it was completely destroyed, as were most of the buildings and most of the infrastructure of Port-au-Prince.
And the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that emergency doctors are now leaving Haiti.
There are emergency physicians that are leaving, and I don't think the Wall Street Journal was speaking just of military. They were just speaking of emergency physicians there. I think that as the non-governmental organization physicians who have partnered with us, as many of the international countries that have come in and have partnered with us, as there is diminishment in acute numbers of injured patients and patients who have injuries that need care, as that number diminishes, and it is as the duration away from the earthquake continues to increase, there will be less of a need for the acute medical care that has been provided.
Dr. Waldman, since you just returned last night, what phase would you describe the medical need right now?
Well, I think what was just said is basically correct. Earlier on, there was a tremendous need for traumatologists, basically, to take care of the many, many surviving injured people, some of whom had very complicated wounds that required highly specialized care. The surgical teams on the USNS Comfort and on shore did really heroic work in trying to address those initial needs. Now, with those having been addressed, there are really very few earthquake-related injuries being seen, new ones at this time.
Dr. Ron Waldman, he's with USAID, coordinator of U.S. Government Medical and Health Emergency Response in Haiti. We're talking about the ongoing emergency in Haiti following the earthquake. Dr. Waldman, just before the break, you were talking about the medical emergency continuing there.
Thank you, Diane. So what's happening now is that the initial needs of the injured population have been addressed. And there's a transition phase occurring now, which, as you mentioned in your introduction, has to do with the oncoming rainy season, the numbers of displaced who are living outdoors. They number in the hundreds of thousands. They're living in temporary encampments that range from quite small church parking lots to quite large encampments of 40 to 50,000 people. Shelter and sanitation are important issues that will need to be addressed before the rains arrive, as well as monitoring for the occurrence of outbreaks of transmissible diseases. So we're in a phase now where we're moving from what might be termed the direct consequences of the earthquake, the injured, to the indirect consequences, which have to do with communicable diseases such as diarrheal diseases, malaria, and other communicable diseases of that sort. We're in a stage of racing to prepare to prevent and control those kinds of things from occurring. At the same time, because of the nature of the traumatic injuries, they won't go away. And although the patients have been treated once, they will need to have in many cases, their surgeries revised one or two times. And for those people who have required amputations, there need to be revisions of their stumps and fitting of prosthetic devices.
And so, who is there to do this work?
Well, there's a very large international community there, in addition to the U.S. government resources, which are substantial and continue to be substantial. So working together with the United Nations agencies and with agencies such as the International Committee of the Red Cross, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, the many, many non-governmental organizations who were there, as a community, all of these problems need to be approached and hopefully will be addressed adequately.
James Kimsey, I'm sure you saw these various tent cities and the kinds of shelters being offered to people. They sound pretty inadequate.
Well, they certainly are. They, particularly in view of the oncoming rain and bad weather that's about to hit them, they're little sheets of tarpaulin that they sleep under, and if they manage to get that, so it's a sad situation. There's no question.
When you see this kind of situation as it currently stands, and anticipate the rains to come, how will those people currently in those kinds of temporary shelters be affected when the rains do come?
Well, very traumatically. The weather there, when I was there at least, and I think when the doctor was there, wasn't too bad. It's
begun to rain now. Not yet. Uh-huh.
Well, there have been a couple of rains just to give us a little harbinger of things to come.
But
the steady, ongoing, monsoon-like rains have not yet begun.
And I just wonder, I mean, will the numbers of diseases, communicable and otherwise, begin to spread in that kind of situation?
Well, you'll have standing pools of water, and obviously mosquitoes will spread these diseases, and the good doctor can probably speak to this in more depth than I can. But clearly, intuitively, you can tell that the worst might be yet to come for these poor people.
And joining us now from La Hogan, Haiti, is Carolyn Miles. She's the Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President for Save the Children. Good morning to you, Carolyn.
Good morning, Diane.
Tell us what it's like on the ground today. How has it changed from, say, a week ago or a month ago?
Well, I think your guests have been talking about some of the things we're really concerned about, like the rainy season. But one thing I can report, and we're actually on the road right now on the way to a camp in La Hogan, is that there is more aid getting out into these camps. We are very actively distributing shelter materials and household items, et cetera. So that is all starting to work better. Is it going to be enough? I don't think so. We certainly have a lot more work to do, but those distributions are happening. I think, you know, being here on the ground, you see how widespread the devastation is, and there is just so much work to be done. There's so many buildings that have obviously been destroyed, so many people living outside of their houses. With the rainy season approaching, as your guest has said, we are certainly really concerned about particularly the health of children and the things that really need to happen before that to prevent even more cases of malaria, diarrhea, respiratory infections, et cetera, which can be really deadly for small kids.
And, of course,
the government.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I was
just going to talk a minute for about the education system.
Sure.
The Haitian government is starting to try to get kids back into school, which is really important. We were at a school yesterday, and the children were learning outside. They were not able to go back into their school because it hadn't been yet assessed to be safe. And so we had about 100 kids that were learning kind of outside under a tent, and so that was quite difficult. But it's really important that you get kids back into school into some kind of normal routine.
Carolyn, you talked about preparing for the rainy season. Of course, the children of Haiti were vulnerable even before the earthquake. How can you help them as they move into the rainy season? You've talked about shelter, you've talked about kitchen appliances and the like, but how much shelter can truly be provided, especially in the countryside?
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now what we're doing, and we've committed along with the international community to getting at least temporary, very basic, so, you know, a tarp with a rope and some kind of cover. I mean, most of these people are spending their lives under a bed sheet. So that's obviously extremely tough. And so at least getting something that will protect them from the rain is really key and important, and we are working to do that right now. And we think that we can reach a large majority of people before the rainy season really starts, which is in a couple weeks.
I gather you've been trying to help mothers to understand how to keep hands clean and how to try to keep food clean and the like. But with the water situation as it is, how can you possibly do that?
Well, it's actually, we're using some pretty innovative techniques here in Haiti. There's a real tradition of using songs to get out messages. So we've actually recorded in Creole a bunch of songs about, you know, washing your hands and keeping safe during the rainy season, and for mothers, keeping their children safe. Also really focused on breastfeeding. That's an incredibly important thing for newborns right now, is to make sure that mothers continue to breastfeed. And now that the food supply is a little bit more consistent, mothers can certainly do that. So that's a really important thing that we're doing. I'm actually sitting right now next to a program, which is a cash for work program, where we're putting people back to work, clearing the rubble, and we're giving them some income. So they actually have a chance to go out and buy the food that they need, which is now locally available, and they have some income to support their families. So that's really important. I'm standing here actually next to a cash for work crew. So those are some of the important things that you've got to do to get people ready to, you know, to be able to survive over the coming months.
Carolyn Miles, she's Chief Operating Officer, Executive Vice President for Save the Children. She joined us from Laogan, Haiti. Thanks so much for what you're doing.
Thank you, and thank you for giving us a chance to talk a little bit about it. Thanks.
My pleasure. Now, turning to you, Admiral Robinson, how many Navy personnel are now in Haiti, and how long do you believe they'll be staying?
We have approximately 5,000 personnel on the ground and at sea in Haiti. That includes approximately 8 naval ships and 34 aircraft. Of the number of sailors that we have there, we are going to stay until there is a clear indication from the Haitian government and from Southcom that we're no longer needed. And there's no particular urgency to leave, but we need to make sure that as we enter this next phase, and as I think Dr. Waldman stated very correctly, the next phase of the refugee camps, of the encampment of people in small spaces and in large spaces, is going to turn the necessity for clean water, for sanitation, and also for immunizations, infectious diseases, diarrheal diseases, and also things like measles, which often can create havoc in close-quartered situations. So what we're going to need to do now is take our cues from the international interagency, including the USAID, the that Dr. Waldman represents from the Department of State, from Department of Defense, and also from Southcom.
And, of course, you've got to worry about offering care to the caregivers, Admiral Robinson.
Well, I think that as we got underway on the ship and on the USNS Comfort, and as I went and talked to the crew, one of the things that I wanted to impart to them was that they would see things that would be extraordinary. They would see things they've never seen before. I think that I know that that is in fact true. But one of the things that I wanted to make sure that they realized is with the devastation on the ground, with the number of patients that they would receive with horrific injuries, very acute trauma, that they needed to make sure that they also cared for one another, that the physical, emotional, and spiritual health of our caregivers was incredibly important. And that has to begin with shipmates, that is one another, making sure that they would watch one another and suggest timeouts to one another, do the things that are important to making sure that we care for the needs of our people itself. The director of surgery on the Comfort wrote a very wonderful piece, and he said, the first day, which was really a misnomer because the first day of receiving casualties lasted about 40 hours, in which the operating rooms and the intensive care units were run at 100% capacity for that entire time, was a very, he said, a very interesting event. And that interesting means that folks were amazed to see the injuries. Mm-hmm. But the other amazing thing was that they came together as a group. They came together to care for the people of Haiti, and then they came together to make sure they cared for one another.
Mm. Admiral Adam Robinson, he's the 36th Surgeon General of the Navy, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And we have many callers, people who'd like to join the conversation. Let's open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Diana. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi there. Go right ahead, please.
I am the executive director of Acupuncturists Without Borders, and I just returned from Haiti a couple of weeks ago. And we were there to assess the situation in terms of our ability to treat traumatic stress, emotional traumatic stress, and post-traumatic stress. So we are going to be sending teams over at least the next 6 months to treat people for trauma. Now, the work that we do with acupuncture also treats physical trauma and really can help speed up the healing process for many of the injuries people have gone through.
I'm glad to hear that and know that I'm sure, Dr. Waldman, that you've got all kinds of treatments being used to try to help people through their suffering.
Yes, and I think that there are a lot of advantages to doing that as well. And what we try to do is to adapt our priorities, develop our priorities together with the government of Haiti, the Ministry of Health, and the international community. I think that there have been there's been such an incredible outpouring of support and of generosity from people who have so much to offer that hopefully this will all contribute to
Indeed.
The speed with which the recovery can occur.
Diana, thanks for calling. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Diane.
Go right ahead, sir.
And once again, you're right on target. First, I'd like to commend the Navy for the tremendous amount of humanitarian effort they have been doing and are doing. I'm with Rotary International, and we are presently looking to get to our Rotarians throughout the nation to collect 200,000 used tents, which we've already arranged with military transport to get delivered to the islands. We also have Rotarians on the ground in Haiti 24/7 who not only keep us apprised of what's going on, but let us know. Are you there or not?
I'm certainly there.
Okay, I'm about ready to lose my signal.
Okay, sir. Well, I certainly appreciate the work of Rotarians. That sounds like a very noble cause, trying to get those 200,000 tents there. to what extent will distribution be a problem, Jim Kimsey?
It'll be a big problem. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of resources pouring into that into Haiti, and the challenge is to once the resources are on the island, to have them distributed efficiently and effectively. And because, as I mentioned, the infrastructure wasn't very strong before the earthquake, and it is now almost non-existent. So to the extent that we are trying to build up the Haitians' ability to do this on their own, we've got our work cut out for us.
James Kimsey, he's chairman of the International Commission on Missing Persons, chairman emeritus of Refugees International. We'll take a short break here. When we come back, your email, your phone calls, your tweets, and messages from Facebook.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, ConstantContact.com. By the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and Progressive.com. This is NPR.
Our February readers review the novel, The Help, the story of three women who risk everything to break through the boundaries of race and class dividing Jackson, Mississippi, at the height of the civil rights movement. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And welcome back as we talk about the ongoing disaster in Haiti, which many organizations are attempting to address. One person has sent us a huge print email saying, enough with the problems and descriptions. What do we do? Who and when will someone do it? Enough talk. What action do we take? Who do we call this to move along? I'm so sick of hearing about the problem. What are the solutions? Sounds like an American who has decided immediacy is what we're all after. But Admiral Robinson, I know that immediacy is not something that's going to be possible in this situation.
Diane, that's correct. And I will tell you that it's not going to be possible, even though on every occasion people want to rush into the building that's on fire. It's not necessarily the way that it can occur. And one of the things that has to be taken into account is the government of Haiti is actually in charge of this entire operation. I recognize that the government of Haiti has major problems. I recognize that the seat of government has collapsed. I recognize that there is chaos and that we're in a chaotic situation. But the Haitian people and the government of Haiti have to be the ones that are going to direct and to help with how we sequence what occurs in the country.
And let me just read an email here, and I'd get both you and Jim Kimsey to comment. Here's an email from Len in Charlestown, New Hampshire, who says, last night on CNN, there was a report of local and state Haitian government officials forcing various contributors to sign their supplies, no matter what the type, over to the government official in charge, and then the government would sell the supplies to the affected population. Jim Kimsey.
Well, there's no question there's a high level of corruption and thuggery going on there, and our ability to mollify that is somewhat limited. The French have already accused us of occupying the country, and I think the challenge we have for an intensive, durable, sustained, long-term effort and presence in Haiti is going to be very, very challenging, and something that we don't like to do.
Well, Admiral Robinson, when you say the government has to take charge of this, if, number one, you've got no real government in place, and number two, those officials who call themselves the government are doing this kind of thing, what is the U.S. government and all the NGOs, what are they supposed to do?
Well, Diane, I think that a couple of factors. Number one, what is occurring in Haiti now with government officials and corruption is not new. What is new is the earthquake, the disaster, and the level of aid that's coming. Number two, no matter how upset or how urgent we think we need to move, we really can't move faster than whatever government official that describes themselves as a Haitian government official will allow us to move, because although the government has been disrupted, although the government may be slow, and although the government may have challenges, there is still a government with a judicial system, with several other systems that are in place, and even if they have been disrupted by the earthquake, they haven't gone away. So we have to pause, and we have to make sure that we are in alignment with the government officials that are there. A very challenging situation and a very frustrating situation, but nonetheless a very real situation.
Is the U.S. government allocating more resources to the Navy for responses to disasters like this? Admiral Robinson, it seems as though this is the second natural disaster in the past 5 years, the tsunami being the other in which the U.S. Navy has played a major role.
The U.S. government has contributed about $680 million to the earthquake response thus far in Haiti. The humanitarian assistance and disaster relief that is occurring with the U.S. government and with the Navy is a strategic imperative and part of the maritime strategy that the Chief of Naval Operations, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, and the Chief or the Commandant of the Coast Guard have written, the 21st Century Maritime Strategy. In that, and the point that I'm trying to make is that a strategic imperative of that strategy is to make sure that we in Navy have humanitarian assistance and disaster relief response wherever that may be. And that's a worldwide call. So this is part of what we're going to do. And the cost of this is, in fact, great, but we think that the aid to people in need calls us to action.
And Admiral Robinson, I know you have to leave us, but if you could take one more question from Baldwin, Missouri. Good morning, Phil. You're on the air.
Yes. I have two questions. One's about the United Nations. The first one is, I'm proud of America doing all that it can and more to help the victims of Haiti, earthquake, but America's so far in debt, and yet Germany, who has a $250 billion surplus since 2007, 2008, 2009, give or take 8 or 9 million either way, but yet you don't hear anything about them contributing anything. Also, I've heard reports that the United Nations is trying to force the Americans to put the United Nations label on things donated by Americans. And this has got to stop.
All right, sir. Thanks for your call. What about Germany, Admiral Robinson? To what extent are other countries around the world, all countries, contributing?
I think that the international community has been quite generous in their contributions. I can't speak to Germany, and I'm certainly not going to try to speak to their revenue or financial system. I will suggest that, as an example, the Israelis sent an air medical hospital within approximately 24 or 36 hours of the disaster, and they were up and running and worked for several weeks. The Dominican Republic, the international community in general, I think, has been quite generous and very prompt in their response, as has the non-governmental organizations and as has the interagency, that is the U.S. agencies that have worked this issue. So I think that the cost of what we do has to be balanced against the necessity of people who are in need and who are desperately need the help. When someone cries help and needs help, I think it is our ethical and moral responsibility to try to deliver that help if we can.
Admiral Adam Robinson, he's the Surgeon General of the Navy, Chief of the Navy's Bureau of Medicine and Surgery. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Diane.
Jim Kimsey, you want to comment on that international financial aid?
Well, I think, as the Admiral pointed out, there are numerous countries that have offered to help, and once again, the bottleneck is once you get the resources to the island, the efficient application and distribution are the challenge. We met with Leonel Fernandez, the president of the Dominican Republic, and I think they recognize their proximity puts them in a position to do as much as anybody in terms of the help of their fellow nation on the same island. We're interestingly in a conversation with Cuba, who have sent, as they pointedly tell me, many doctors to Haiti.
And on that very point, here's an email from Connor, who says, I understand there is something like 1,500 Cuban doctors providing health care in Haiti, including vaccination campaigns. Several hundred of those doctors were already in Haiti when the quake struck. Can your guests comment, Jim?
Yes, I think that's correct. And they recognize their obligation. In addition to that, we're trying to get them to take some of these patients into their facilities in Cuba. Now, the thought of, and we've offered to provide transportation, but the picture of even unmarked American C-130s landing in Havana give them heartburn. And so that we're still trying to work our way through that. And in addition, that would provide a broader platform for continuing discussions toward better relations with that country 90 miles off our shore.
Dr. Waldman.
Sure, I'd be happy to address a number of these issues. First of all, the outpouring of support from the international community has been enormous, both in terms of money and in terms of human resources. The UN Health Cluster, which is the body in charge of coordinating the health response, in conjunction with the government, has over 350 organizations and governments registered to it, and that in and of itself poses a problem with coordination and priority setting and distribution of supplies. Just in a sentence regarding the UN demanding that the U.S. put its label on commodities, I really, in a career in disaster response, haven't heard of that, and I certainly didn't see or hear any of that in Haiti either. I think that across the board, the United States response is greatly appreciated. It is the largest. It dominates the scene to some extent. And I have to say, the Admiral's not on anymore, but the degree of coordination between the United States government agencies, particularly the U.S. Agency for International Development, which was in the lead, the Department of Defense, Department of Health and Human Services, the coordination was excellent. There are daily meetings. Information is passed freely about, and all representatives from each of those agencies carries that information to the international community through the cluster system that has been set up. So there are things that are going well, which is why we heard the representative from Save the Children say before that there is progress being made. It's easy to find imperfections in the system, but there's considerable palpable progress being made on a daily basis.
And you are listening to the Diane Rehm Show. You know, every now and then when I think about Haiti, and especially what's happened most recently, I think of the story of Job. I mean, that poor little country has been hit time and time again. And now we are faced with the question, how long? How long do you think, Dr. Waldman, how long do you think, James Kimsey, it's going to take to somehow put this country back on some kind of normal footing? What's your thinking?
Diane, I don't even know if normal footing is what we want to achieve. The normal in this situation is that Haiti has, before the earthquake, the lowest health parameters in the hemisphere. I don't think we ought to be shooting to reach the bottom. I think that we need to make a much longer commitment. I hope that the energy and enthusiasm that's been generated by this disaster will enable us to stay in it for the long term and to help.
What is the long term?
10, 20, 25 years, I would think. It will be required at least for Haiti to really reach a level of health care and a level of socioeconomic indicators that are within the norms for the Western Hemisphere.
Jim Kimsey?
Well, it's ironic that since they declared their independence in 1804, they later became, in that century, the most prosperous nation in Latin America, well, in the Central America. At one time, they were very, very, were doing very well. So the capacity and potential is there. They've denuded the country as you fly from Dominican Republic to Haiti. You see the dramatic difference between what the forestation of Dominican Republic versus Haiti. So in the time it takes to grow the trees back and the time it takes to rebuild the infrastructure for what that country's become, you've got to think long term, and what that term is, I don't think anybody can say. But the beginnings, I think, are there, and since it's so close to us, our responsibility to think long term and provide that durable assistance is going to be necessary.
Do you think that other countries will continue to participate generously, to try, as you suggest, to commit to the long term, Dr. Waldman?
I hope so, Diane. There's a process that's been begun in Haiti now, the PDNA, it's called, that brings all of the donor agencies together to develop a single plan under the leadership of the government that stretches out over years. And hopefully the funding can be procured by the Haitian government. It's so sad what's going on there now. But I have to say that many of the government officials with whom I interact don't hesitate to point out that there is an opportunity here hidden within the disaster for Haiti to be set back on a track with sufficient resources, both financial resources and technical assistance, that could enable it to change its fortunes considerably. But there's no question but that it will take time and continued energy and enthusiasm that we've seen generated in the international community over the past month.
Well, we'll end on that up note and look forward optimistically. Dr. Ron Waldman, he's coordinator of U.S. Government Medical and Health Emergency Response located in Haiti. James Kimsey, he's chairman emeritus of Refugees International, founding CEO, chairman emeritus of America Online, Inc. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.